I don't know about you, but I have been having a hard time lately reading the news. There are so many things that are upsetting. Government shutdown agreements squashed by billionaires, school shootings while we fail to pass sensible laws to promote gun safety, healthcare being denied to immigrants or LGBTQ patients who need it, incompetent or morally impaired candidates proposed for important government positions. I can only take so much in the morning when I open up my phone to read it, or at any time during the day at lunch when I stop to look and see what's going on in the world. I found that I can read less and less of it nowadays before I have to stop and play some mindless game on my phone, filling up buses or crushing candy or hearts or whatever it is that's there, right? Otherwise, the emotions get too overwhelming. There's anger at some of the absurd realities that we face. There's frustration for some of the predicaments that we are in. There's resignation that things are bad and there's not much it feels like we can do about it. So I play silly little games for a while. I feel like I've accomplished some small task, and then I come back to the real world and carry on. Anybody else have an experience something like that, doing something like that? I thought so. So I felt a kind of kinship in reading one section of our Torah portion this week. Parshat is Vayeshev. It is the opening chapters of the story of Joseph. Yes, that Joseph of the Broadway show that I know all of the words to. So just a warning, I might sing a little bit. Joseph, who is the favorite of his father, Jacob. Joseph, who is a nuisance to his 10 older brothers. Joseph, who is beneficiary of his father's favoritism, wearing that coat of many colors. Dreamer of dreams that imply his superiority to all of them. His brothers, as we know, get fed up with him, and they decide to sell him off into slavery down in Egypt. Joseph works as a slave for a guy named Potiphar, an Egyptian officer, and ultimately becomes head servant. Until Joseph rebuffs the advances of his master's wife, and then gets blamed for attempting to seduce her. And the penalty for that, of course, is that lands him in jail for a number of years. Actually, when you do the Bible math in Torah, his time plus as a slave plus his time in jail seems to be about 13 years. From age 17 when he goes down to Egypt to age 13 when he's elevated at Pharaoh's court, 13 years of, it's a long time to have things not going so well, right? As Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote, and Donny Osmond, among others, sang, Joseph Luck was really out, his spirit and his fortune low. Alone he sat, alone he thought of happy times he used to know. I can imagine Joseph sitting there in prison, literally down in the dumps, resigned to his fate with nothing to do about it, depressed and regretful for what could have been. Now, I'm not exactly sure what game he was playing on his iPhone to help him get through the time, but something to take his mind off the despair that he might have felt. Look, I recognize my doom-scrolling and overwhelmedness at the state of the world is not the same as being confined to prison as Joseph was, but that sense of hopelessness, of despair or resignation to how the world just is right now, I could imagine Joseph feeling. So while I was commiserating with Joseph and feeling hopeless and overwhelmed at the situation, I thought a little more about the portion and about the story, and there were in fact two things that helped Joseph get out of that predicament. Two things that I thought maybe could help me, could help all of us. The first, even in prison, we are told Vayehi Adonai et Yosef, that God was with Joseph. Joseph is blessed throughout his life by this connection to God. Even when he was a slave in Potiphar's house, we are told the same phrase, Vayehi Adonai et Yosef. Joseph does okay even as a slave because God is watching out for him. He has this connection, this relationship, this faith in God. And so Potiphar's whole household prospers because of Joseph. God's blessing is on all that Potiphar owns and all that his fields, and it's all due to Joseph. That's why he gets that maximum promotion to be head of the household. Even when Joseph is in prison, in fact, we're told that God is with him, and the warden likes him and makes him head inmate in charge of all of the other inmates that are there. So maybe having a little bit of faith in God, connection to God, will get us through these doldrums and these despairs. We certainly hope so. We certainly can pray that this is true. The second thing that gives Joseph a way out are dreams. Dreams. Now we remember as a youth, Joseph has dreams. Dreams about his brothers and his superiority to them. I dreamed that in the field one day, the corn gave me a sign. Your 11 sheaves of corn all turned and bowed to mine. I dreamed I saw 11 stars, the sun and moon and sky, bowing down before my star, and now I realize why. So here in prison, Joseph's story again concerns dreams. He has dreams at the beginning of the portion and here at the end of the portion. Here's what happens. As you may know, two new prisoners arrive that Joseph is now in charge of, and they happen to be pretty important prisoners. One is Pharaoh's cupbearer. The other is Pharaoh's chief bread baker. And apparently, who knew, baking of bread in Egypt was quite an important thing. 53 different varieties of bread, says one of the commentators. So Pharaoh's chief bread baker and chief cupbearer land in prison. Pharaoh's mad at them. We aren't told exactly why, although our midrash, the rabbis, fill in all kinds of interesting answers. It's not clear whether this was justified or just the temperamental whim of a mercurial leader. But one night in prison, they each have a dream that upsets them. Joseph says, dream interpretation really is God's domain, but come on, tell me what you heard. Tell me what you saw. So each of the two of them, the cupbearer and the butler and the baker, tell Joseph about their dreams. And Joseph tells them what he thinks those dreams mean. That the cupbearer will be forgiven and returned to the court. That the baker, unfortunately, will be executed. And as it turns out, as we read a couple of verses later, Joseph is 100% correct. The baker 3 days later is in fact hung and his head is lifted off of him. And the cupbearer returns to Pharaoh's court to wait on Pharaoh once again. Now, Joseph had actually asked the cupbearer, hey, when you get back to court, please remember me that I'm here. It's not really fair that I'm just languishing in this prison. Remember that I did this good favor for you. The cupbearer returns to court and promptly forgets about him. For 2 years, he forgets about him. Until the start of the next chapter, next week's portion, Pharaoh has bad dreams and needs a good interpreter. And all of a sudden, the cupbearer remembers, oh yeah, that Joseph guy was pretty good at this. Joseph comes to the court, interprets Pharaoh's dreams successfully, rises out of prison to be prime minister, and on with the second half of the show and the rest of the story. Here's the point, though, that I focused on this week. Yes, in prison, it is Joseph and dreams connected once again. But it is not Joseph and his own dreams. This is not about him rising up over his brothers, which again, he'll do in the second act. He'll do a couple later chapters later in Genesis. It's not he himself who is the focus of the dreams. The dreams are about other people. It is Joseph and the dreams of others, the wrongly imprisoned, the unfairly accused. Helping them is what ultimately gets Joseph out of prison. So I thought maybe that's the way out of our doldrums as well, out of our despair about the state of the world. Focus less on our own personal problems or dreams and focus more on the dreams of others. How do we work together to help fulfill other people's dreams? The dreams of children to go to learn in school without worrying about active shooter drills or teenagers with easy access to firearms. The dreams of immigrants in our country who want only the opportunity to work hard and succeed, to build a better life here, fleeing from violence or oppression or drawn by the American dream and willing to strive for it. How do we fulfill the dreams of people to be who they are without being subjected to hatred or bigotry or ignorance, without being judged by the color of their skin or their background or their country of origin or ethnicity, by the faith they profess or the person that they love or the person that they are? How do we work together to fulfill the dreams of our youth, to live in a world with a climate that is healthy, with clean air and clean water, where the basic necessities of food and shelter and healthcare and respect and decency are attended to for everyone? Let us focus on how we can achieve those dreams, and that may help us out of our doom scrolling and despair. Find a cause that you believe in, something that you think is important, whatever it is. And I promise you, there are organizations and groups that are out there that are working on it, that like-minded people are there who want to be of help to others, solving the problems of the world, that you can be a part of in helping make those dreams come true. Joseph's way out of the doldrums and the overwhelmedness of his position came from his faith in God and from working with the dreams of others. Maybe that's our way out, too. That in helping fulfill the dreams of others and working with other people with faith in the outcome, we may fulfill our own dreams as well. Ken Yehiratzon, may this be God's will. And together let us say, Amen. Amen.